Yeah, baby. Almost. Rob's about to come back. We have one last one to do. Baby, we lost. I'm so sorry, love. Honey, it's awful. Rob.
Rob, don't you dare use this as an outtake, by the way.
Baby, I'm so sorry.
Oh, am I here?
I'm so sorry, baby.
Schadenfreude.
I know.
I hate fantasy football. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
That's a way of letting me just do a quick check. I know I'm doing good. I'm rooting so hard for your dad right now.
Oh, I know he's actually might pull it off.
It's brutal, but we're getting into the nitty gritty of it all.
This is a crazy. I know we have so much like that fourth spot, the third and fourth spot. Are
I know
like six different teams could get into it.
I'm perpetually in sixth place right now. It's so annoying. I'm like, I got as good a record, but I just don't have as many points as you guys.
We need to win this to stay in fourth, but
I need you to lose this so I cannot be in sixth.
Isn't this always the way?
It's Amy beautiful.
Welcome,
everybody.
When we first, Merry Christmas, by the way. Happy holidays,
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yes, happy holidays.
When we first started this podcast, we said, okay, before we start, let's just get on the mics, let's talk it out, let's get ourselves ramped up, and then when we both feel ready, we'll go into welcome. And I think what's officially started the last like year is. Each of us, it's like a game of chicken to see who can start the podcast at the least opportune time.
You said welcome just now, and I'm like, okay, welcome.
Okay, I mean, we're in it, clearly.
But on the plus side, we had much more energy and enthusiasm this time around as opposed to last time.
You seem to be feeling better, my friend. Yes. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing much better. That Monday, actually, it lasted almost throughout the week because we recorded on Tuesday. I still felt it kind of in the weekend. But this last Monday when I woke up, I was like, oh, shit, this is what normal feels like. I'm ready to go to work.
If you all listen to the Bright Eyes episode, which you should, I listened to it. It's a banger, man. I'm very proud of that. I think we did a good job.
Dude, I can't help but be a little proud of myself because we've said it before. Forgetting after an episode, like kind of like, oh, I forgot everything I said. Really forgot everything I said after that one.
Well, that was my point is you start out. You're clearly you're very and it's a dual thing, right? We're co-pilots here, but
that's right.
I think as is usually the case, but you really rally in that second
that's
half,
right.
man. You
that's
got
right,
in
man.
There. I was proud of you. I was like, wow, he is fighting through.
I had a good co-pilot. Good co-pilot to work with.
Is this the Michael Jordan flu game? It's possible.
It might just be. Thank you, Scotty.
As I always like to remind my students, he was hungover. So if you're sick, don't go to school. Like if you're sick, don't try to muscle through it. Think you could tough it out. Stay home.
Yeah.
Stay home, everybody. Anywho, I don't know what we're talking about now. Hi, my name's Colton.
I'm Rob.
Rob. And we're
and we're just getting into it. This is going to be a fun episode. This is a very different episode for us.
I don't know how to title this. By the time this is out, we'll have figured out how to title this because I think what we've mentioned this is before is our first Know Your Rights song gift exchange.
Yes.
Is maybe a way to put it.
I think that works. Yeah.
We in a previous episode, exchange songs we thought the other person would like to discuss based off of what we know of them. And almost like going to the mall, you pick up a sweater. You think, God, I hope Rob likes this sweater.
God, dude, in your metaphor on that episode, you kept saying it. And as I was editing it, I'm like, oh, now I get the metaphor. During the recording, I'm like, what the hell is he talking about?
You know, I think a lot of metaphors fly around in this podcast. It gets real tricky.
It's tough. I loved in the last episode where you said, I saw the lights go out from behind your eyes.
I saw it's like you walked mid-rumor through. You're like, I don't know how to finish this. I set up this whole mountaineering metaphor and I got nothing. But you know what? Again, you rallied.
I was going to say, technically, I did kind of finish it later on. I brought up Peaks and Valleys, something like that.
Let the record show that Rob did finish that metaphor, yeah. Everybody. So, hey, this is weird because we are recording. It is November 30th, breaking the illusion. Mm-hmm. I know, everybody, but it is also technically Christmas time. This is absolutely your time of year. You already got a very, I was going to say, very nice cable sweater going on,
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. I bought this in the spirit of not buying somebody else a gift. I bought myself a sweater.
And I have a nice green Nike sweater, which...
I love that sweater. I think you've rocked that before.
I've tried to. Nike, you know, sponsor this podcast. We need you.
Yeah, I don't know. Child labor and everything. I don't want to get in involved with that.
Well... I can't help but look at the Kobe Bryant poster right behind you and the Nike of it all.
Yeah, okay, the Nike of it all. I was going to say, what can we do here?
Is there something else that he's known for that other than the Nike?
So, everybody, this is really sad that we're not doing our Christmas draft this year.
Yeah, it is. It's... Yeah. Well, yeah, what happened with that? I think the people collectively told us, you all think this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
We're not having as much fun as you are.
I think me texting people going like, you have to vote is just was clear evidence that this wasn't working out. But it was fun. It was fun for us. And maybe we'll bring it back next year.
I was going to say, you know what I think we need? We need time for it to settle. Mm-hmm. And we will come back when maybe they'll write more Christmas songs also. Because let's be honest, we were kind of running low.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was supposed to be your year to choose all the songs. And I didn't want to put that on you, man.
So, but yeah, this is exciting. I like recording these with you because I feel like way before it's really holiday time for me, I get to cosplay as if it were Christmas time. I'm trying to get in the mood. What's like are you doing anything now other than buying sweaters to get yourself holly jollied?
Movies. I got my go-to movies. I've already watched both Home Alones. I watched both Santa Clauses. Now, to be fair, I didn't really watch any of them.
They're just on. They were,
yeah, on in the background while I'm doing stuff.
But if you're like me, I did this for Halloween, and I do it also for Christmas. Like, I don't like to, like, my big holiday ones, the ones that I'm like every year I end up watching, I save those for like maybe a week before, right?
I'm sure you can guess what I'm going to watch Christmas Eve.
Oh yeah, it's Muppets.
Yeah, Muppets, baby. I can't. I had to fight it. I could either watch Muppets right now or just throw on Santa Claus. And I'm like, I'll throw on Santa Claus. Give it to me, Tim Allen.
It's gonna be. Well, there's a couple, right? Probably like Peanuts Christmas and others, but likely Christmas Vacation is up there for me. And yeah, I don't even know. Yeah. And I don't even know why. I think that's every time we have a holiday episode. I know we always get to that. There's some weird, like, alchemy around the holidays where actual critical thought goes out the window and it's literally just, oh yeah, this is
for me. It's totally fine to turn off needing like something really artistic in the background. I'm like, I'm totally fine. It's December. Let's rock the Christmas stuff. Now my mom has kind of ruined it a little bit for me because a week before Halloween, she was playing Christmas songs and she couldn't understand why I was upset.
That is an ongoing, like, I need to just speak now while I have a microphone to the public and in respect of Halloween, everybody.
Step on that soapbox.
We really need to get our act together as a nation when it comes to celebrating Halloween. It is so sad. There are no houses giving out candy anymore. There's no more decorations. There's like weird, like, costuming also has become, I don't like to get too much into this part. I'm slowly transforming into old man on the stairs, but also not even slowly, like it's happened immediately. We need scary
listen
costumes.
Listen to all of our episodes. You will hear this did not slowly happen.
We need a good string. We need a network of houses giving out candy, and we need to push back that Christmas, like, encroaching into October.
Mm-hmm. I think fourth Friday of November, Christmas begins.
It's got to be because, like, yeah. I mean, it's already, I mean, Black Friday as an idea is already insane. Mm-hmm. Like, that we have that. And do we have any background on why it's called Black Friday? I'm acting like we have a producer that's going to look this up for us.
I have actually heard, I've heard the term before.
I've heard it when it comes to, like, the Great Depression.
The history before. I have my mind on a different term because I'll get to it in a minute.
I was gonna but say, yeah, I know I, there's like the Depression has like a Black Friday, and there's like there's other yeah. versions of it, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I just you'll never catch me in a store on the fourth Friday of November.
I made that mistake. I want to say there were a couple times in my lifetime, but the one I can remember most readily is the last time. And I was in grad school. I was actually getting a Christmas gift for Casey, my wife. And I went into, okay. we were in Lancaster, or actually Palmdale, right? We went to the Best Buy in Palmdale. Ooh. And I was like, I was in the suit, man. And I remember I parked at the Target, that's sort of across the way, mm-hmm. if you're getting the geography of it, right?
I go there every Tuesday and Friday. Yeah.
Palmdale people, you know, this is all for you, right? We're giving you really great Antelope yeah. Valley.
And can I clarify? I go there every Tuesday and Friday because I drive people to grocery stores.
That's fair.
Part of my job.
No, that's your.
I'm
that's
not
your,
just hanging out at Target. You're every not Tuesday
just
and going Friday.
To Target just for fun. And I took a parking spot that was like there for me to take. It was like it was a very packed lot, and I'd done a couple of rounds. And I remember once I parked this van that was like likely I think similar to what your job is. It's like a van that kind of drives people around, but it's got shuttling. Like a. Yeah, yeah, it's a shuttle. It's a children's preschool on the side. It's got that like on the side of it. This woman drives by, sees that I parked in, I think, what was the spot she was going to do. And she flips me the bird and honks her horn and then drives off. And I went, never again. I will never.
She was teaching the kids right. Because you already had me I'm going like a preschool. What? Why are they bringing them for Black Friday going like, never do this, kids?
That was my theory is there are no kids in that van. And she was driving it around. To like hopefully get her, I don't know. This is like so far into the past now.
She was using the van like it was her handicap card or whatever.
Maybe. I don't know. As we were like, all right. And then lo and behold, I got Casey a nice pair of red Sony headphones that.
Oh, I wonder what they look like.
She can't wear because it hurts her too much.
Well,
so
fortunately, they're still being used.
I ended up wearing a pair of red headphones. Anyway,
I can see him. It's very nice.
Bah Humbug is what I'm. Humbug? Humbug? Humbug?
Humbug.
Bah Humbug. Don't, no, Bob Humbug. He's the guy that I ended up getting.
Okay. Okay.
What is happening?
So I got to tell you what I did last night.
Okay.
And I know that we're always way out of date on every episode. I was going to say Happy Thanksgiving to you, but now it's like 2 weeks later.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we got to work on that for sure. But I caught myself. I was watching Blue Jays fans reacting to the World
Dude,
Series.
Dude, I was too. I think we watched the same video. Was it the video where they show bit by bit, like
oh,
each
yeah.
event?
Showing a whole. Oh,
is it across the fan base that we watched the same video and we watched it on the same day?
Yeah, it's. I was kind of. I'm like, what am I doing right now? But I did. I learned the term that I was saying a couple episodes ago to her. I'm like, there's a term for it. Schadenfreude.
Okay. Yeah.
That was the word I was looking for.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Was the one you were watching. Was it for game 6 or game 7?
Oh, I watched multiple videos.
Okay. Cause the one there's two from the same one video and I've seen multiple as well. And the one in game 6 is it's a Halloween game. And so it's like the two guys who are dressed up like PB and J, I think, or something. And, man, I'm telling you, I think there's a bit of performance that I really do appreciate. Like, I think these people know what they're doing. I think anyone who's like, recording their reactions to sports, they know that if something bad happens, they need to be like ultra dramatic to like really feed into. I mean, think that they're getting paid, right? When that stuff happens.
Oh, for sure.
So.
There was a small part of me that felt like they were auditioning to be like the next announcer.
That's
Blue Jays.
But it's a service that they do, and I really appreciate all other Major League Baseball teams having their fans craft these performances to put online. It gives me strength, man. It's weird.
I thought about it for maybe 20 seconds, where I was like, maybe Colton and I should. No, I'm not going to put us in that situation. I don't want people to see us when we're devastated.
No, and here's, I know that I would, like, we would give such great fodder. It'd be like Dodger fans. Can you imagine how many people would want to watch Dodger fans like be upset? Maybe life-changing money, but it's also the most degrading thing I can think of.
Well, and on top of that, if they lose, I will feel personally responsible.
Yeah.
You know, I put the bad vibes out there. We shouldn't have done this. We shouldn't have done this.
I'll go one further, right? Which is this. What I've found is I like to watch now. I like to watch the like podcasts and reactions when they've won, when the Blue Jays win and they're happy. And here's why is because I get to be like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Happy. Okay, I get what you mean.
It's like
you know what's coming. Yeah, I get you. All right. I can agree with that. Oh yeah, amount of cynical laughs that I had last night, where I'm like, "This is dark, Rob. Like, this person is heartbroken, and you know what that feels like. You've been there before." But I still couldn't help but be like,
"It is.
It's so enjoyable."
As usual, there's something about certain. It's like there are certain teams where it's like how they respond to playing the Dodgers, like really sets my opinion of them. Where it's like with the Brewers, right? Everybody, by the way, I know we're a music podcast, whatever.
We're getting there.
It's the Brewers when their manager, right, was like, we're just a couple of average Joes. And he was like all folksy and he was talking to the guys, hey, everybody introduce yourselves in the press room. That stuff is awful. And I know I appreciated almost call him Doc. I'm not a player, but
Dave Roberts
and I think Blake Snell, they're all like, well, it's an act. It is. But it's like that mentality of like, hey, we're just the regular guys going up against these big time players. It's the most obnoxious thing. It's weird how certain fan bases like to mythologize their teams. And the Blue Jays, I think, are the worst because their whole thing was just these guys loved each other. Like they were all friends. And I can tie this back to music. I really hate the need to like have everybody be buddies. Like every band has to be best friends. Yeah. And when you go on tour, when you play with another, this is something I think we've done in the past, but it's also, I find very obnoxious where you go, we're playing a show with our good friends blank. Right. Cause all these other bands are friends with each other.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's such a weird, like child fantasy that everybody's buddy, buddy friends. We're all, having sleepovers. It's just weird.
I feel like you're getting at like that's not the real world, man.
It's not. I think you said this about what was it? Was it like Red Hot Chili Peppers? Where it's like, yeah, those guys don't really talk outside of.
Chad Smith and Flea, pretty much just according to interviews, I was in there like, yeah, we're not like friends.
We're coworkers.
We're coworkers.
That's good.
That's fine.
That's work life balance. Don't take it home.
It's even more dangerous to start a band with friends. It's not going to be as good as if you just find the right person for the job.
I say that, but I should also check that I'm talking to what I consider my best friend, and we met from being in a band.
It's true.
We weren't friends before.
We were not freaking friends before. Well, and I was about to say, and we were perfectly capable of what we're doing. I'm like, I don't know if I can completely dedicate to that either. The friendship part lasted, everybody. The friendship part definitely kept going.
It did last. And I think it would have lasted if the band would have persisted. I don't know. I think it would have. But now I think about it, I'm not friends with a lot of people I used to play music with, which is.
But you would be friendly if you were around them.
I'm not going to be. I'm sounding weirdly cynical. I don't mean to. It's just the Blue Jays bring it out in me because there's like.
Well, you know what? I feel like maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for our next segment. But I have a perfect transit. Speaking of Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
I am so rooting for your dad right now. And you're now at 36% chance of winning. So you're not out of it.
But I got to go downstairs. Casey is watching her phone right now and having a conniption that JSN has not gotten any points.
I love you guys, but I have to root against you because we're tied for we have the same record, but you have more points. So I need you to have a worse record than me.
This is rough. Everybody, we're going to move to the next segment. I might not be here when we get back. So
if he is here, we're going to discuss the mountain goats, damn these vampires. And we're also going to discuss Murder by Death. That crown don't make you a prince.
That prown don't make you a prince.
I always get that one wrong.
That prawn doesn't make you a sea captain. So
there we go. Oh boy.
I'm excited. Okay, well, I will be back. I promise, everybody.
I think Merry Christmas. Will. Merry Christmas.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseblown Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball Entertainment podcast.
That red zone thing gets to me every time.
Right. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're going to give you a live, meaning 2 weeks after the fact, update on what's going on with our...
This is, oh, wow, yeah.
Chargers are in the red zone. We need Keenan Allen, everybody.
Anybody but Keenan Allen.
I just want someone in, like, we have, again, I love that we have listeners from different places. Listeners from outside the U.S., check the score of the Chargers, Las Vegas Raiders football game.
Week 13.
Yeah. And tell me, or email me. At no.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
And tell me what happened. And I will confirm with you, because I also know what happened. I just want to make sure we're getting this correct, why we're doing this.
And the reason it matters, it's fantasy football. Colton and I have the same record. This is my chance to, for the first time all season, possibly be ahead of you. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself because I have a 99% chance of winning. And I love you, Nikki. Sorry. But I it feels like I got this.
It's insane that my dad has three different Chargers players all in the red zone as well. So the odds of one of his guys getting a touchdown versus one of mine.
Yeah.
It's all very high, everybody. This is insane.
Yeah. So. And I don't like the Chargers. Probably my second favorite team in the league is the Raiders.
So at any given moment during our discussion of these two songs, which I'm very excited to talk about.
Me too.
I may yell out or I'll yell at some point.
Hey, dude, we're not censored. There might be some expletives.
So everybody just be on edge. This is going to happen. Yeah. this was a great idea. And this was I enjoyed my gift. I thank you for giving me my gift.
I enjoyed my gift as well.
This is everybody give the gift a song to your relatives, to your friends.
Just if you can't get somebody a gift, send them a text to be like, hey, you should listen to this song.
You like this song, listen to it. And it's the idea is that they know the song already. They listen to the song a lot and you text it to them and go, hey, this song that you like, here you go.
Yeah. And then start a podcast with them.
And then start a podcast and all will be well. Oh, nobody scored.
Stop looking at the screen.
Nobody scored.
Down to business. That's good. Nobody scored. Yes.
I have notes. Well, I was looking at those notes.
And now Bowers is on offense. Let's do it.
So I think we can, obviously we got to do this one at a time, right? We could be real weird and try to do both at the same time. I think that would be a mistake.
I think there is going to be a little interweaving. But
Of course, but
not intentionally.
I would like to suggest we talk about my gift to you first. That crown will make you a prince.
That's right. By murder by death. Oh my God. I'm just going to stammer through this. Let's go.
It's the most clear in my brain right now because I just listened to it and I want to keep it in there. You've talked about them a couple of times. I think the first time we brought up Murder by Death was because we were talking about another band that we were both ripping on.
Who was it? Gaslight Anthem. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because I literally went to a show where Gaslight Anthem was the headliner.
Yeah.
And me and the two people I went with, we just went, saw Murder by Death through the opening. They just played six songs. We knew there was not going to be an encore and we left. I mean, we drove to Hollywood and left before Gaslight Anthem even started playing.
Yeah. That's the correct decision.
Yeah.
That's.
But you brought up in the Bright Eyes episode, and I think I just chalked it up to Fever when you said, I think we've covered all of the big influential bands from our teenage years. And I went like, yeah, I think you're right. Murder by Death is one that I'm like, oh, actually, that would have been what the discography would have been interesting.
What I would say is that this episode is great in that I feel like it's addressing two of our separate influences that we have had, but not ones that we both have necessarily shared.
That's true.
Whereas I think what we have done has been covering a lot of bands that have been important for both of us in different ways, but in the kind of weird shared sense. But I do love in listening to both of these, in as much as I can compare myself to John Darnielle, I think these are, like if you gave both of these to someone who's aware of both of us and what we do in our writing and that, they would be able to pick out who picked out which song. I agree.
Yeah, because mine's a lot more like kind of progressive driven music, like a lot of overdrive, or not necessarily a lot of overdrive, but just like, you know, rocking. There's a lot of cymbals going
on. It reminds me a lot of, I won't get this wrong, Tomato Vase.
you can get either way, Tomato Vase, Tomato Vase.
You're right, of course. Yeah. But
a failed solo project that I
wouldn't call it a failed. I would just call it an unknown solo project.
Uncompleted. Yeah.
It is a very good project, but it reminds me of that, right? Like your solo stuff, which I would like to encourage you to complete, but
we'll see. A new year's coming.
But I do hear a lot of that. And you've been talking about this band to me for years.
Sure. And especially the album that this one's off of. We've done our, you know, because of Coheed, we had a pretty elaborate conversation about concept records. And yeah. I always felt like this is a really great concept record, which is kind of strange to do the one song from the concept record, but it still covers enough of the ground, Dorian. But there is context that has to be kind of brought in when we discuss this song.
And of course, your boy Colton is going to... I went in kind of knowing that was the case, but also willfully not caring. But that is also... Here's my thesis statement for this song specifically. And I have not heard a lot of other Murder by Death. I shouldn't say a lot of other. I haven't listened to... I didn't listen to anything else on the record.
Uh-huh.
But based on this song... Murder by Death to me is the band that the Deer Hunter wants to be. Like,
ooh, interesting.
The way
how do you feel about this, Casey Crescenzo?
Yeah, you're listening, buddy. I'm sorry, man, but I think he's maybe nodding. I don't know.
Yeah, he might be going like, I really like this band. Yeah, that's cool. All right.
You know, okay. The more I think about that, the more I get upset. Like, I was upset in the moment just because I don't like to upset other people, and which is weird, I guess, knowing what I do, but. I don't like to set other people. So I was very upset. And I had like a lot of like things I was like not happy about. But
it was very
surreal. When I think about it, I'm upset by that.
Oh, yeah. Well, but again, he's part of what we just talked about in the last segment. It's just like, oh, you're trying to be friends with everybody. Just say good things about the music. It's like, no. Acknowledge when the music's not good.
And I
do it all the time to myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
come on.
And this music, it's very good. I know. The reason I say that is, I felt like the Deer Hunter and a lot of their things, they were trying to meld like the kind of proggy circa Coheed like sensibility with this like kind of Baroque like instrumentation and like the violin and orchestra and giving it all that like the vibe of the era the story is supposed to be set in, right? And giving it this like sense of majesty. And you know, again, there are songs that did that, right? And like Night of the Town or whatever. But I think this song feels so The Crown Don't Make You a Prince, but Murder by Death feels so effortless in how it ties it all together. That was my read on it and listening to it. It's all those things. It's not trying to be one or the other, and it doesn't feel shoehorned in that we have the cello, right? And these like more kind of Baroque instruments building.
Well, that's the thing, is the endearing quality of this album to me is usually when you hear strings and you hear piano, it's like, okay, it's a hired hand to come in and fill this in.
Right.
These are members of the band. Like, they have the celloist. They have the keyboardist. You know, this is part of the act. It's not something to where it's like, okay, we need this for this song, so let's get somebody in.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and the song just starts off immediately kind of giving it to you. You know, and it's that swirling kind of just.
And I was asking about that. It's 3/4, you say, because I could hear the triplets, right? I can hear the kind of waltz effect to it. It's, and that's in the drums too. It's a very cool, again, it's, I was expecting to feel like it was more of that kind of circa, although I think this is pre-circa, so it's like its own thing, but.
Yeah, we're talking Circa Survive, not circa this time frame.
I guess, yeah, I should make that clear. but the band that I actually heard more of in that opening and when he comes in, can you guess?
No.
Modest Mouse.
Okay, it, I can. Interesting.
That guitar line to me feels very like a, like Devil, or not Devil and Guts, or sorry. Oh my God. It feels very much like a Moon in Antarctica demo track, whatever, like that. And it almost like Cowboy Dan too, right off of Lonesome Crowded West. And his vocals have, it's an Isaac Rock slash like Tim Casher quality to it. Like, I guess Cursive's the other band, right? That
Cursive would be one that I could possibly, you know, draw a similarity to, but I mean, also with like a little bit of a Johnny Cash tone to his voice, because he eventually
baritone.
He eventually really goes Johnny Cash. Oh man,
it is a very cool effect, and like you said, I want to listen again because I want to check to hear what that cello is doing in the opening when the guitars are going. Is it just hitting like the single notes?
There's a playfulness to it, but I mean, it is functioning a lot more within the bass realm of it.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
And I think live, what they would be doing is the guitar would be kind of doing a little bit of that, like, you know, like kind of just playing that riff. But I don't remember them playing it live when I saw them. So this might be a song where there might still be a little bit of, well, there just is some extra instrumentation for the studio quality of it all.
Right.
But the song, even then, when it first kicks in, it's like it all feels so warm and natural. It doesn't feel like, while there is studio additions, you know, like overdubs and stuff like that, it still has this warmth of a live performance.
Yeah. You know? No, I totally agree with that. And I think there's something to be said about, I mean, it's what, I know we have a bass, cello, keyboards, drums, vocal guitar. So I think I'm listening to the drumming, right? And that's Vincent, Alex Schrote. I like that last
name. Sure it is. Yeah.
There's something that the drums do that kind of fill that opening, because the guitar, obviously, it's like, it's clean. It's doing that kind of swirling line, what you're talking about. You have the cello doing the kind of the notes to kind of go with each change. Dun, 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 dun. And then the drums are what's supplying the heavy, right? Yeah. And I don't like when drums kick in with like a crash. It feels like a ride crash, what he's hitting on. Like, I don't normally like that when the guitar is, I mean, there's no other heavy to back it up, because it sounds really thin and like, but in this sense, I think it's because so much of the other instrumentations are giving it a lot of bass.
Yeah,
it works. Like, it's weird how sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but there's a certain kind of like, it gives it that kind of propulsion. Cause if the drums were doing a more like kind of ride only, like more kind of laid back, like hanging in the back of it, I think that opening would feel really tepid and kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, both these songs, I think the drums are awesome on both of these songs. I think they give so much personality to the songs.
When we get to Mountain Goats, I have a lot to say about the drummer they've had for, I mean, I don't think they have many more, but for a while, they were spoiled, is what I'll say.
Yes. But I mean,
go ahead.
Well, then it hits obviously, you know, all the drums in the alleys are. I've read the lyrics and I still kind of forget them, just because they're so secondary to the feel of the song. It's just kind of like a sound more to me than like soak in every word.
Well, and there's also just not a lot of them, right? But that opening couplet, which is really the only true couplet of the whole song, but it's great. It's all the drunks in the alleys are taking up arms to undo their whole lives in a day. If their hearts, they don't change before long, in the heart of the beast they will lay. I don't like the lay part very much, but it's great. There's something about the you can fill me in more on the story part of it, but when it moves from that into like the kind of secondary, like not even verses, right, but like the other parts that come up, I think he's great at picking his spots, and this song giving the music space to do all the cool stuff that it wants to do.
That's what this song is, definitely.
Yeah, and it's ideal.
Yeah, and when it comes to the album, this is kind of like, this is more of like the emotional swing of it all. That's what the music's creating. To where plenty of the other songs, there's more lyrics to kind of convey the message, which is basically the devil comes into this town and just raises hell. You know, and so they're dealing with trying to get rid of the devil, or are you going to just like give up? And this is kind of, you know, all the drunks are giving up. You know, are you going to fight back? All this crap. Like, it's really just the swirling emotion of everything that I think carries the day with this song.
The I do got to point out the he peels the wood from the walls to get this. This is where the music drops out again. I think it's just the it could be just the cello and piano, or piano primarily.
Bass chords. The bass chords right there are so Tool-like. It's just, it's such a good vibe. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, to where a lot of the time you're just doing single notes on bass. This is like chords to give it a little bit more of that urgency. And I love the fact that it's in this soft spot to where it's like, this is kind of a lull in action, but it's so tasteful, as opposed to when it gets heavy, all of a sudden he's playing bass chords. He's not doing it.
If you're not familiar, everybody, if like a good like common example of what Rob's is talking about is like the opening to Tool's Schism. Like that's like the
very
most
Tool.
Common, like do. Or, it's a cool
or
effect.
Maybe sober. Sober is what I'm more thinking, kind of the chord sound.
Oh, boom, boom. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Either one. Tool.
But it's
Tool.
It's very Tool-esque. It's very Tool-esque. And we've never mentioned them on the podcast, so we might as well bring up Tool.
I got to include them in the bands mentioned from this last episode, and it felt right. I was like, wow, we haven't done this in a long time. And we did. Oh, it would have been better if we talked about Weezer, and we didn't. But
all right. Check out episode one, everybody.
No, but that the dropout is great, because I would say even from the beginning, what the song's doing is it's the cello, I think, that's doing that. It's giving this increasing sense of tension, even from the opening kind of instrumental, because the cello is doing the dun, 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 dun. There's something about the kind of, if this is, I'm doing my best here. This is in the story of the album. It's near the end, right? And there's a kind of increasing, like, dramatic tension that's getting built. This is such a great vehicle for that, because even when it drops, right, and we're in this kind of like smaller setting, you can hear it. There's like this like kind of foreboding essence. And then the release part is just fantastic.
Well, it's because it does that, the little like this is where I think I'm like, OK, she's not, this is a violin doing this really, what's the word I'm looking for? Like kind of chaotic, but like, again, building a little solo. And then just freaking huge hit, just punch in the face, where like, all right, now we're going, and like now we're going into like the drums are doing that halftime fill to kind of just give that, we're all headbanging, you know, type of moment.
I do want to clarify, this is for my purpose, is it violin or cello? Because I hear cello on the list, on the actual band instrumentation part.
It's happening. This is where I think that it's studio overdub.
Because cello is lower, right? It's a lower register.
Yeah, cello's lower. It's going to definitely be kind of in the bass area, whereas the violin is going to be, what, alto?
Because I agree, it does sound more violin than cello in the thing. But either way, it's like that. And it's funny, that's now doing the kind of swirling effect the guitar had, right? They're kind of changing places in a cool way.
Yeah, and it's just the frantic nature of it all, like Torres, it's the, I don't know, it just, it almost, in the right mind setting, as I said in the last episode, it can really give you goosebumps, like, you know, if in the context of the album.
Yeah, then it, when it hits in, and it's, like, the drums are right, they do that, like, slower,
that halftime.
Yeah. It's great. It
earns
rarely,
that
right?
moment. It earns that moment, where like there's so many times where people do it, or it's like, of course you did this, of course you did the halftime drum thing for dramatics, but in this instance, it's like, no, this is, it had to go here.
And I think that's a good lesson too, and I think it's one I wish. I hope I never sound too didactic, everybody on this podcast, like, everyone learn learn to write better.
You're
things.
A teacher. Like, you can be didactic.
No, but it's because it's like what I wish I had. I wish I had been a bit more like, how do you call it? I think I was very interested when I was younger in learning how to write good songs. Like, I don't want to say I wasn't, but I wish there are things I had picked up more of, like from the songs I was listening to. Cause like we're doing the same thing. We're listening to songs we love. We're getting like what lessons of songwriting we can impart from that. But I think the lesson of knowing that you have to really earn a buildup like that, but also to not overindulge. It's like two bars, right?
Yeah.
Like that, the heavy is not this, like, it doesn't take us out to the end of the song. It's over.
No, it's the tact of it all. Yeah. You know, it's beautiful when people can just show that type of like responsibility with songwriting. It's weird to use that term within it, but it's just like, don't fuck up this song. And like you said, it's just like two measures of that. And then it goes into this beautiful carrying us out moment. Like fucking perfect. Like, yes, this is a nice easing out, and it transitions into the next song fantastically as well. But I mean,
is that next one? What is it? Is it a? I'm actually looking at the track listing. Okay, I did hear Pillars of Salt right after because YouTube flipped over to it, and I did hear that transition. That is very cool.
it's super cool, and it's a soft song. You know, all of a sudden it's got like this more like kind of sad, droney, like almost marching into a unfortunate fate. Which spoiler alert for everybody, doesn't work out for the town in this album.
Yeah, not shocking, I guess. It is, I have to call this out, that Gerard Way and Jeff Rickley of Know Your Rights podcast fame, only
I like
this
that. Podcast, that's the only place you can know him from.
Are in songs one and two, The Devil in Mexico and then Killbot 2000 of this record. It's loaded. This is 2003. Wow, 2003.
I know. And I remember a buddy of mine, maybe he's listening, John Coleman. I appreciate it. He's the one who turned me on to this album, and just right away I was like, this is cool. This is kind of different. I can get behind it. And of course I was just enamored by the fact that it's like, oh, they have a piano player and a cellist. That's charming. That is freaking charming to me.
And here's where I know I've said this before. We were talking about this song, actually, I think, like when we first brought it in. I think when I was younger, I was more apt to be like, wow, like it's same way. Like when I would play shows, and I remember there's a show I played at a park in like somewhere near San Diego. I can't remember, when I was on tour with Jesse Williams. And there was a band, I think it was a brother, sister. They could have been. I don't actually remember.
Okay.
They had it was guitar and cello. And there's something about like a stringed instrument like that, like violin, cello, like in certain kinds of music. I mean, obviously we're talking about bluegrass and that stuff. Sure. Yes, of course. Yeah. But in genres where it doesn't necessarily feel like it needs it, I've been both like, that's amazing. And also I've seen it fail so many times. Like it becomes such a, like, look at, I keep talking about Yellow Card because Yellow Card is the most obvious example. Like, hey, there's a pop punk band.
Yeah, but it can feel very gimmicky.
That was a word on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
Like gimmick.
Yeah, to where it's like, but if you do it right, hell, it's awesome. And that's what I loved about this album, to where I don't know if at the time I was of the same maturity that we have now when it comes to having grown up with music and kind of found different ways to decipher what's good, what's bad. But back then, it just felt like listening to it. Everything that's coming in just seems right. It doesn't feel like phony. It feels purposeful.
Well, and I think that's because of the songwriting, right? And I have not listened to near enough of anything else they've done, but I do think it's telling that. I mean, even Cursive at a point had, like, I think she was a celloist, right? Like, they've bands have had, like, stringed instruments kind of stand in for certain records, and they don't ever usually stay. Because I think that's at a certain point they go, oh yeah, we can't keep doing this. I think the argument about it is that with these other, like, kind of more rock-centered instruments, like, that becomes, like, the kind of core, and they can transform in ways that I think those other instruments can't. Like, a cello is a cello, and, like, obviously, if you're a good enough player, you can do things with it to give it different dynamics, but it gives songs a certain tenor that I think it's hard then for each song to kind of, you know, to kind of define itself. It's kind of like with piano, right? Piano is great, but it's
and they have a pianist as well,
right?
You know, and it and he ends off leaving the band after this album. I believe it's after this album. Maybe he was in a little on the next one, but
it doesn't shock. Unless did they replace him with another pianist?
They didn't.
Okay, it doesn't shock me, which is not a bad thing. It's just I think that's what's hard about kind of what I would call non-traditional instruments in what is a more kind of rock setting. I think that's tough to give it these peaks and valleys. And I'm only mentioning it also because Mountain Goats has a very similar problem in in terms of instrumentation.
Yeah.
And they have yet to correct it. And they've actually said, no, we're going to keep this going. So,
well, see, and yeah, I get you. Well, and the reason the dude from Murder by Death left, according to an interview I saw with the front man whose name escapes me, I typically, guys, I don't learn band members' names.
Adam Turla.
Yeah. But he said that just like the guy didn't really like being on the road. That was really what it came down to where he's like, and they are road warriors. That is, well,
then forget everything I just said.
But not to discredit what you just said, no. But I think that was kind of the rationale behind it. But to compliment what you just said, they didn't decide to replace him. They didn't decide to go and get a new piano player.
Oh yeah, I mean I stand by it because I think you're right. I think there's still a, like, I'm thinking about bands who have taken on other players. I'm like, oh yeah, this is our guy. It's funny because like the other band I can think of is the Avett Brothers. Funny enough, they have a great cello player. And
two straight episodes, everybody, we've got the Avett Brothers on here.
You know what? That's my new thing. And we have yet to do an Avett Brothers because I don't know how to talk about that band. But they also, he is not, whenever they do band photos and that, he's not actually in the band. He is, but he is. It's funny. There's a kind of, as the records have gone on, he's been in less and less of them because there's only so much. I don't know. But all of this is to say, for me, I found the way they used all these instruments really charming and really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we said, they didn't overstep their bounds. They kept it in a really cool pocket toward the song.
4 minutes. It's like a 4 minute song, and it goes a lot.
Yeah. There's so much that happens within that 4 minutes, and I can't help but admire it. Now, to be fair, that not my favorite song on the album.
That, and you know, when I was going through it, I did kind of make the call of like, what song do I feel the most qualified to talk to you about in a span of what it is? And it's also like a panicked, I think, 30 minutes. But
that's fair.
I think you mentioned, but what is your favorite? Just so we can get it on the record.
Probably my favorite is until Morale Improves, The Beatings Will Continue.
Yeah,
that song I just think is a perfect song. We don't have to dive in that song. It's just, but I mean, I love this album. I still listen to this album fairly commonly. Not all the time, but every now and then I get bit and I'm like, yeah, let me listen to this album.
Would you say, because I don't know, what other, like, how many other records do they have after this? Like, what's the like output like?
They have a fair amount. They're still, I think they're currently still releasing stuff. Yeah, they have something out this year.
Oh, shoot. But, yeah.
I'm more familiar with really the next two. I'm familiar with like The Exorcist, but more Breakdowns.
Breakdancing?
Breakdancing, thank you. Yeah. And then El Boca, El Lupa, and Red Tooth and Claw. And then I kind of fell off.
Yeah, I was going to say, they have, man, 1, 2, they have a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, looks like. And one came out this year, Egg and Dart. I think the album titles have gotten weird over time.
Yes, they've gone directions that I'm like, like I said, he really starts to embrace the Johnny Cash of it all.
But every 2 or 3 years, you know, it's nice to, I mean, people don't always, I think, recognize this. Like, there are bands that find a way to exist in a, like how big is Murder by Death? Like, I would find, do you think they're still playing like mid-sized theaters?
I know they're road warriors. They're making most of their money off of, you're touring all the time.
Right.
Yeah, which has got to be tough, and eventually you got to slow down.
But I think that's, I don't know, there's something about that I find endearing, that's still a thing, because I think there's too many now. Like, I think the weird version of music is it's kind of an all or nothing. Like, you're either filling arenas and you have like this, like, you know, crazy success, or, and there's like, there's a middle class of bands and musicians. And when I say middle class, I'm saying literally economically, not in like quality.
Yeah.
There's a middle class of bands that that's what fills up the sphere of music. Like they can't all be Beyonce filling up the spectrum, whatever.
Yeah. There's not going to be a whole bunch of selling out SoFi for a week straight Taylor Swift.
yeah, Taylor. Dude, by the way, a fun game for everybody to play this holiday is if you have a younger relative of, you know, anything, like I think below 15 is a funny version of it. Okay. Just convince them that you don't know who Taylor Swift is. My whole Thanksgiving, I was talking to my niece and I was just like, who's Taylor Swift? I don't know. And
I wish you would have told me that. I already passed Thanksgiving, but I'm going to see everybody again on Christmas, so I'll try to remember that.
It is quite a fun game, and you could take it as far as you can. I'll be like,
turn it into a drinking game.
I actually did go on to forget who Travis Kelce was. I was like, Travis who?
Oh, dude, I try to forget.
You can go as far of that as you need. So are we ready to pivot?
Yes, let's pivot. Vampires?
Man.
Oddly enough, very similar instrumentation.
It now, is. Well,
minus cello, minus the strings, but we got piano, we got guitar, we got a drum beat that I think carries a day for it, and another cool bass part for me as well in this one.
Well, so at this point, because for a long time, Mountain Goats, it was just John Darnielle. And I think I know for myself in the future, I would love to do a Mountain Goats record. And so doing a kind of bigger breakdown of like the Mountain Goats to me and like that whole thing, I think there's a part of that I want to save also because we could do this forever. But
I kind of want to do Murder by Death and maybe even
we'll
some point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a...
This is a teaser episode.
Yeah. The evolution, right, of Mountain Goats is like just John with just a boombox, right? The classic... like really scratchy recording, lo-fi recording version he had, where he was like recording a song a day for a very long amount of time. This man is we have covered musicians that produce a lot of art. He produces insane amounts of songwriting in short amounts of time, always to his benefit.
Sure. That's kind of the danger with being prolific. Sometimes it's like, okay, maybe put a little more time into this one.
I would argue almost always, but at the same time, there's an immediacy to his songwriting that I have embraced, like as I heard more of it, which I think is great. I mean, like the write a record challenge that you've done multiple times. I've done a couple, and like the whole spirit of that to me, that's Mountain Goats, right? Where it's write and record the song when it's the hottest. Like, and when I say hottest, I mean when it's just like when it feels immediate, like when the emotion in which you wrote it is still there. And I
captured that.
Yeah. And I think there's something to that. That's really, it will give whatever songwriting you have more of an edge because it is so rough also, but then there's something that the engine behind it feels a lot hotter. And I would say over time that has not always worked for them, but when they get,
the engine's got a lot of miles on it and it's like, maybe we get a new car.
But I do love also, so when Peter Hughes is kind of more officially, like they had another bassist before him, a woman, I can't recall the name. And then Peter Hughes joined and it was just guitar and bass. And it was just them playing like shows. And then John Worster is also the drummer for, I don't want to forget this, Superchunk. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He's an amazing drummer, like really fantastic.
Sure sounds like it.
And he is given... And what I would say is one of the more difficult jobs in like rock/whatever the Mountain Goats are drumming, which is when you hear a lot of Mountain Goats songs, a lot of it is just John Darnielle writing. And the only draw to Mountain Goats is the lyrics, like the especially early Mountain Goats. The only reason to listen to them is because he is an amazing lyricist.
Very thoughtful lyricist. Yeah,
very. And I think that to attach drums to that to make these songs sound different, but also to make sense is insanely hard. So this song is a great one to me because I think it is a good example of the music actually starting to carry more of it and giving more space to what the lyrics are doing. So I'm happy that you chose it.
Well, this is the one that you showed me a long time ago, and I didn't. I tried following up a little bit more. I mean, I have Mountain Goats albums on my old hard drive, but I just this is the song I would always just kind of go back to, and I just love everything about it. I love the textures of it all. I love the minimalism and elaborate. Like it's I want to say it's minimalistic, but then there are moments where I'm just like. It's cleverly placed. A lot of cleverly placed moments of kind of something a little bit bigger.
He is. If I'm only looking at the lyrics here, especially like he can be very verbose, right, with his lyric writing, but he can also, and I would say it's over time, he is very great at these are like very short lines, right?
Yeah. Like yeah, very quick.
Three to four words per line, and yet it's the power and the imagery of those lines, like
yeah.
It's very different from like Conor Oberst, where Conor Oberst, it's the lyricism, the metaphor, and there's like, it's almost like jazz, right? There's like tons of notes in his lyric writing. Yeah, yeah. Whereas with John Darnielle, it's a Hemingway-esque. I don't think he would like that necessarily. I don't think he's a big
Hemingway second. Here we go.
I know, but it's like very short, punchy images, but it's more about the collection, right? Yeah. Of how these images play off of each other.
Yeah, he keeps it really concise and kind of like a vague imagery to where it's like you can really apply different interpretations to it. Like when I first heard it, it took me a minute to actually like connect that it's like, oh, drugs are kind of part of this. Yeah. Okay, like for me, I was just thinking like somebody who's kind of having a tough time trying to push past difficulties. And then it's like, now I get how vampires are kind of a symbolism like for a drug user.
But I think there's also a reading of this song, which I am prone to when I hear it, of like a bunch of vampire fighting cowboys. Like there's something weird about that. And that's he exists in that space, right? Where he will storytell, right? He will dive into like bits of fantasy and those things. And yet, of course, there's always going to be that like deeper, whatever illusion he intends, and some of them were obvious than others. It's funny because I remember and looking at that Crown Don't Make You a Prince, I think the songwriter, God, man, I want to make sure I get his name. He deserves for me to know his name.
Adam
Schroep.
Yeah.
He said when he introduced the album that he's like, this is all just about telling a story. There's no other meaning. He's like, I might want to be artsy. None of this means anything. It's just a story. Yeah. And I mean, I don't believe him.
I think he's
lying.
I think there's a little bit of lying. And also apparently this is all actually just from what I remember being told, so this could be inaccurate, but I remember being told that he had he went to school and studied theology.
Religious studies, he said.
So there might be actually some credit to what I just said there.
And he actually just said, and in that same little snippet I saw, he said, and also any religious stuff, I'm into religion because I studied it. So that's, I don't know. I don't believe it, but...
Yeah, I think that there's probably some double meaning going on here. Come on, buddy.
It's an interesting coupling, right, with that. Mm-hmm. Because I would argue with John Darnielle, that's all he's doing, right? He's anytime he's telling a story about, and he has like little mini like biography songs, right? It's the same thing. It's always because there's some essence of like human experience that he wants to get at. This is a cool song for that reason, because like you said, there's the imagery feels so stark, and yet none of it's showy. Like the first line, it's... The first stanza, brave young cowboys, the near north shore, mount those bridge rails, ride all night.
Like, I think it's north side, I'm just saying.
Oh, side. I'm looking at the word side, too. I'm thinking Hawaii, everybody. I want to be back. But
I understand.
None of that is, like, and this is, I would call him a better writer than a better lyric writer. Does that make sense?
I can see what you mean.
He's not writing, and I think this is to his credit, he's not writing lyrics. He's a writer. Like, I've read books from John Darnielle. I've read several that he's written. Devil House is good. And he's more literary than he is musical. I think that has always been...
I got you.
And I don't know if he would agree with that. I don't know if a lot of Mountain Goats fans would. But to me, his whole idea is like, what if a writer, right, wanting to work in literature, instead just put it all to song? Because like, even like with his melodies... with the actual backing music, none of it is great.
No, his vocal melody is somewhat atonal.
Da, 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 da.
It's like that single note.
But it's like that warble. It's like you're like just slowly bending that one note. Like it's like the Isaac Brock of vocal melodies.
Take his guitar and just apply it to vocal melody. I can see it.
But then what's great is when it gets to that second part of that verse, right, is when the melody changes and it goes to that really warm. So let this whole town hear your knuckles crack. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, again, there's nothing, such simple pieces, but it's the the way the lyrics work with that, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, and the melody and the instrumentation function together, because, I mean, I'll just, I mean, we can go back to the second part of that second, that first verse, but when it hits the chorus, that, like, when it's like, crawl till dawn, like, the guitar is like, dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 to go alongside that, on my hands and knees, like there's such a like, there, it's playing together, you know, like, and usually I would poke so much fun at that and call it lazy, but it just functions so well because the guitar has this kind of cool reiki vibe to go alongside the vocal melody.
Yeah, and I have to point this out, like this is what 2011, and right before this, we had like The Life of the World to Come, which is an amazing record that they put out. And it's all about like Bible verses. And like some of my favorite songs, period, come from that record. But like if you're a Mountain Goats fan, I'm not kidding you. Someone could prove me wrong. I'd be happy to. I could think of maybe two songs before this. There was never a track with this many instruments in a Mountain Goats song before. Like, not really, not traditionally.
I get you.
to have that guitar and piano at the same time, they are such practitioners of minimalism that to have both of those, it's like, whoa. Like,
but it's still being utilized in such a minimal way. It's just building up the vocal melody anyway.
No, I mean, like you said, it's weird how it's almost like for each band kind of establishing their own identity, right? Like even within a record, just as much as like you set the parameters of what your lyrics can do, like what kind of words you're working with. I think it's same in a record, right? Like a band kind of sets up, like, what are they working with? Like what in the sphere of like, literally when you sit down to make music, the reality is that you can do literally anything. Sure. Anything can be music. Right. And so it's like,
oh man,
you have to immediately set your parameters to the listener too. Here's what I do. Right. When I make a Colton Sailor record, I'm like, this is a Colton Sailor record. And like you can do little things, but it's like, and it's not to say that every record has to be in a tunnel, but that's usually what happens.
It's better to me. I kind of like some sort of continuity to an album where it's like, I want something to feel like, I always say this, but of a piece, a complete thought.
I think Andy Hole, actually, Manchester Orchestra, put this really well, but he did it for a record I thought was terrible. But when they were writing Cope, I remember him saying that he likes his records to feel, or he wanted his records to feel more of like the same idea, but like different shades, like almost like working within like one particular color, but different shades of that color. Like that idea. And I think that record, I could see what he was trying to do. I think that's true with Mountain Goats as well. Like they kind of set the parameters with each record. They've like added different things maybe, but it's like the instrumentation has grown more interesting, but it's always been in service to the lyrics. And that's cool.
And speaking
not cool anymore, but
I get you.
Everyone, here's what I have opinions about newer Mountain Goats. It's not good.
This happens. bands age. They, you know, be grateful for what they gave you that you did love. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. the chorus is amazing.
Oh yeah, the chorus is incredible. But I mean, we get so close to. What is my favorite lyric on here? Like, I have a very, very distinct favorite lyric on here because I just think it's so cool that he's saying reflections without saying reflections. It's the...
And in their surface?
Yeah. Yeah, when it's just like, tie those horses to the post outside and let those glass doors open wide. And in their surface, see two young savage things barely worth remembering. Now, all that's cool, but the really cool thing is vampires don't have reflections. Mm-hmm. You know, to where it's like just the fact that he's saying in their surface of the glass door.
Yeah.
See the two savage things where I'm like, that's such a cool way of saying seeing your reflection. You know, and then also having that carrying over aspect where it's like, this is like realizing maybe I'm not a vampire. Maybe there is something better. You know, I love what he's saying in that part where I'm just like, that's perfect. That's perfect to me. Like, it's not Bright Eyes. It's not Conor Oberst type of like saying something where you're like, oh shit, smack in the face. But like when you break it down, you read the lyrics and you start kind of building it together, it's like, oh shit, that kind of like blew past me all these previous times listening to it.
I would say the difference for me is that with a Bright Eyes song, like one we talked about last time, When the Brickman Turns My Way, like mm-hmm. he has an ability to say something that is profound, like deeply yeah. profound. And you're like, oh, like first the mother bathes your child, then the other way around. Yeah. Like stuff and that you're like, oh.
It's
like,
an immediate punch.
Exactly.
Like, oh, okay.
And Mountain Goats, you're right. I think John Darnielle is more the, it's not that there's like, I think there's profundity there, but you're sure. right. It's more upon reflection.
Huh? But hey, it's also, all right.
But it's more like in the way that he's crafting. It's the method he took to get there. And sometimes you're right. Yeah. It's like writing around something, but that's the artistry in that. You're right. I yeah. love that. You're totally correct. Hey, man. Shit, that's a good one. I was going to say, if I was going to guess your favorite, because it's my favorite, it's immediately after that. Beast like pagans, never get enough. Sleep like dead men.
Wake up like dead men. That was the first one that I heard that I was like, oh, that's great. That's a great line. And I mean, I'm going to do it tonight. I'm going to sleep like a dead man, wake up tomorrow and be like, oh my God. But it's relatable. And that carried over like where I'm like, okay, I see what this song's about.
And it's also like it's one of those decisions that I imagine mm-hmm. you, and maybe not him. I think at this point of his writing career in 2011, he had produced like 20 different records. He knows what he's doing, but mm-hmm. That's something that I would hesitate, because I think when you're breaking a rule like that and like that form of repetition, mm-hmm. you want to be sure about it. Like there are things I've done where I'm like, I know in a way it's not good. It's like, this is like a rule I shouldn't break. A thing I shouldn't do. But I think it's like you get like an instinct, like, but I want to do that. Like that sounds good. And I think there's something about, I guess I would call it confidence, right? To play that off.
Yeah. I think there's a confidence and the belief in what it's saying.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, cause I mean, the redundancy of the lyric adds to the redundancy of the meaning.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
I was not expecting to make this allusion. I want everyone to bear with me. Come with me, everybody. Get close. We're going to make this very quick, I promise.
Gather around.
I would relate this to, I think about this all the time, is you've seen The Departed.
Of course, yeah.
Scorsese, everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Martin Scorsese. And I'm thinking about this too, because I'm watching the Martin Scorsese documentary on Apple TV. That is so good, everyone. But
okay,
in Departed, there's a scene early on where it's like from when Leonardo DiCaprio is in like the train in the academy, right? And then mm-hmm. they open to the Boston Police Department. And it opens with the kind of like Looney Tunes, that's all folks, like the transition is like the kind of opening, like from the black, right? Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? It's like the circle forming.
Yeah,
where
Porky Pig would. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels like I know there's a word for that. I don't have it in my vocab right now, but it's mm-hmm. it's like a PowerPoint transition. And it's like you never see that in any modern filmmaking, and I haven't sensed that transition.
Yeah, that scene transition.
Yeah, and it's so imagery. Blatant, and it's like it takes you out of the film. Yeah. And yet I think about it all the time, and I'm like, that's cool. Like there's something, it's like that moment. It's like never again in the film. And it's such a purposeful thing that feels like it breaks a certain rule of like how we edit films now and think about moving from scene to scene.
Yeah. And but especially for a movie like that to utilize something Looney Tunish.
Exactly. Yeah. It was such a funny thing. And I don't know, like I think about that because I think there's something about when you know there's intention for you behind something, that's enough. Like the audience doesn't have to know or think about it, you know, initially. If they trust you enough, it'll work if you've built that.
If it washes over, and like the worst moments is when somebody notices it. Like you know what I mean? Like I've always said, I don't want somebody to hear the drums all that detailed the first listen. You know, because if they hear something, it's probably an error.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, where it's like, just as long as the drums wash over and they handle their job throughout the song, it's good. The bass handles its job throughout the song, it's good. Guitar, that's where it's like, okay, that guitar solo was killer. But it's like, for the most part, I'm more content with the song washing over, and it's like, oh, that was pretty, rather than somebody going, what the hell happened during that one segment there? You know, like, so it's like, as long as it passes, then we're in good shape.
I think as we're talking about all this, I don't want to forget probably the best line is the one that makes the song work, which is not even like the whole chorus, because like every chorus is a little different, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of Bright Eyes ask little changes, but
yeah.
It's the goddamn these vampires. It's like there has to be, it's what I would call his hook. Most of the songs have that like declarative statement that tie it all together. And it's like what the song is like grasping to. If everything else is like this more kind of exploratory of a theme, and the music is all pretty like, I hate to just keep downplaying the music because I do think like the bass and the drums are both doing stuff that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I think without that line, the song is just noodling. And it's,
I get what you mean. Well, it helps that it gives us the title of the song.
Really good noodling. But it's like it keeps it from, it makes it feel like a song that there's a kind of like measure that ties it together.
Yeah. It's what makes my favorite lyric work. If you don't mention the vampires, then all of a sudden that lyric loses a little bit more because, like I said, the reflection aspect of it and the fact that it's like, oh, maybe I don't have to be a vampire. You know, like this is something that gives it that weight. And it's such a good metaphor for, I believe he said he was shooting up speed.
Oh, I mean, so I actually have, there's a whole Mountain Goats wiki, everybody, that, you know, check you have better, no, you have better ways to spend your life, don't, but.
Wikipedia, baby, sponsor us.
It's not technically on Wikipedia, although I don't know what they call that. Maybe it is wiki, but it's the couple, like there's always in each song, because Mountain Goats fandom is what I would call strange, like most fandoms.
Yeah.
Not always a fan, but. He has a great tradition of talking and giving introductions to songs that are, you know, they're very John Darnielle-esque. He is a very funny man. But a couple that I think are great here is this song. This song is about mirrors. He said the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. This is all what he says before. And then this next one was like so many other things. This song takes place in Portland, Oregon, because that's where he was living as a younger man and doing lots of drugs, shooting up. I think a number of different drugs, and like, I think the album We Shall All Be Healed, which is my like favorite Mountain Goats, is only about that time. And it's like so much of the same mode of songwriting. Like he hasn't done a lot of that personal songwriting since. And then my favorite one is slightly longer, but I want to read it in total, 'cause I think it's such a great, just like it gives me another way into it that I don't need. Like you said, like we have our own way of making sense of it. But he said at in Leeds, England, you have friends and you think they're the greatest people in the world. But there comes a time when you realize all at once, or it can come upon you gradually, that your friends aren't the greatest people in the world, but they're actually parasites sucking the blood from you. Not because they need the blood, but just for their own entertainment. And then you have like one friend on your shoulder saying you're just being neurotic. Your friends are great. And yourself in the middle saying, no, they're not. Look at the facts. Like, I think there's something about the song that it's addiction, but it's also the I see it so many times, right? The kind of toxicity that comes from, funny enough, the theme of friendship, right? Friendship can be like I don't know.
I mean, I would call it more like the fake friends that you can make when doing drugs.
Yeah. You know?
Let's just simplify this. I mean, I have a little bit more of a drug history than you, only slightly, but I'm like, yes, I've ran into those. And it's like, okay, we're just here to get high together. All right. Fucking, this isn't real friendship.
I see what this relationship is. Yeah. That is. And that was our relationship for a short period of time before. No, for the record, everyone's never been our relationship.
No, I don't even think Colton's really done any drugs.
But I do think it's okay. Let's list all the drugs we've done in order.
Okay. Yeah. If anybody I work with is listening, please tune out now.
All right. Starting at number 11. No. I think this is where, I think both songs to bring this to a tie. And I don't want to like miss anything. You want to hit something first?
Yeah. the outro of this song, that bass line.
Yeah.
And it's like the simplest fucking thing, but when it comes out and it just hits that like boom, 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 boom. I was like, that's perfect.
It's great. And the piano comes in right. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Yeah.
The two work in, like, in perfect harmony.
It's wonderful. It's my favorite part of the song.
Yeah.
And it's fucked up to say that because it's like, okay, the song's ending. But I'll restart the song just to be able to hear that part again as well.
And that is where I another Darniel special that I've tried to adopt more of, like something he, again, kind of both songs do, but his songwriting that I've always admired is how much restraint that he has, where there are two verses, two choruses in this song, and that's it. He doesn't write a lot of bridges. Like, and his songs are usually verse, chorus, like, I don't even think there's usually a third verse to a chorus. Like, that's not.
Yeah.
And well, he says a chorus, he doesn't repeat the chorus, something he almost never does, right? Most choruses, you'll do another repetition of it. If the line is good enough, it's like, go back to it, right? Somehow. He'll never do that. And it's the immediacy of the line is enough. And like that last one, right? So deep in my arteries, that last, like, goddamn, these vampires. And then everything about after that is, like you said, the reflecting. We've talked about this with other bands too, where the music is like carrying that emotion, but it's not trying to overdo it.
It's that perfect just kind of like guiding you out of this song that like you're gonna have to go back and listen to again, like we said, but it's just like it gives you this perfect like out to kind of reflecting is the right word.
It's I think weirdly, I don't think neither of us intended this, obviously, because we didn't know what the other person was gonna choose, but they are so different in terms of like music and genre, but they both teach the same lesson.
Yeah.
Right. But in weirdly very different ways. Like you could say the, you know, that Crown Don't Make You a Prince is way more just everywhere.
Okay.
I had like three different words. Omnipresent? I wanted to use there. No, three different words. And my brain went, nope to all three. So just nothing. But
I'm glad I threw you a fourth one that you're like still like nope, not that one either.
No, but it's like, you know, clearly you'd be like, oh, this band's doing way more, but they're not necessarily. They're being so great at like showing restraint and being really direct with what they want to say. Mm. And obviously Mountain Goats is too, but they're both then allowing the lyrics to not like over announce themselves, I guess.
Yeah. And not smother the song. Everything is just working cohesively. Two really good songs that we're not gonna rate. Everybody, we're just gonna say we like them.
Now here's where we decide which one is better. No, I don't want to do that because I don't actually know.
We'll just skip it for this one. This is a present to each other.
Can we acknowledge something? Mm-hmm. We both right now thought about which one we thought was better. There was a flicker. I don't want you to tell me. There was a flicker in your
eye.
You want
to just do it?
No, I don't. I don't. Okay. I honestly don't. Because this was such a lovely episode.
It is.
And to be totally frank with you,
I
don't know.
It currently is. Yeah.
because I've told you before, I really enjoy this Mountain Goat song. I wouldn't say it's on my top 10.
Yeah.
And that's also because there's like not even 500. There's more than 500 Mountain Goat songs out in the world.
Well, honestly, that Crown Don't Make You a Prince might not crack my top 10. So
we both got each other middling Christmas presents.
You know, last minute Christmas presents to show that we cared about each other.
It's like if like when you're little and you tell like a family member you like frogs and then for the next 20 years you get nothing but frog presents over and over again.
Yeah.
And
my sister is listening right now. I believe she might get a kick out of this. I Love Lucy. I'm sure at one point in time she was tired of getting I Love Lucy stuff.
Oh, was that your go-to every Christmas?
Oh, no. No, no. I knew better. I knew my sister. So
okay. So this was when I was little. Mm-hmm. I did stop eventually. And I think she may have had like a thing like, please stop everybody. But Kim, like somehow it got out that she liked like little pig figurines. And so anytime I was on a trip somewhere when I was small, I would get her something that had to do with a pig. Everybody would. She had a whole like collection of pig figurines on her dresser. And it got to where it was like completely full. And I don't remember when it occurred, but I think there was a come to Jesus moment where she was like, no more. I don't.
She just want snaps. Just snap like, everybody, you got to fucking stop.
I don't, and I don't think any of those have made it to where her life is now. Which, I mean, good for Kim. I love Kim.
Pigs. Someday, Kim, I hope to own a pig. Like, legitimately, as a pet, one day I want that to happen.
You want a pig?
I do. I've always.
You need a farm, my guy. I think you would be such a good farmer. Well,
I would be shitty. None of them are dying.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's go back. I don't think you would be a good farmer. But
I just need I need a large enough property to own all the animals that I want to own.
I think, okay, I would have restated, you would be an awful farmer, but for the record, yeah. I would too. We would both starve, but you would be a great dude who lives on a farm and owns a lot of animals.
There we go. I'll take it.
That's
now. Here's the tough thing. What are we doing? Is it your song choice or is it my song choice?
Oh, I certainly don't know.
Hasn't even crossed your mind, huh?
Hasn't even crossed mine. I'm certain it hasn't crossed yours until right
now.
Oh,
no, I thought about this earlier today. I'm like, who's choosing the song? Do we rock, paper, scissors for who has to choose the next song? Because this is to start the new year.
It's to start the new year. It's a lot of pressure on this next song. Yeah. It has to be a good one.
Yeah. All right. Rock, paper,
scissors. It's okay. We're going to do this live. Let's do it in the third segment.
Wait. We don't even have to do that. We could just check a... We could check scores.
Let's not check. Let's be civil.
We could check scores.
Let's be civil.
All right, we'll be
civil. No, wait. I'm checking scores. Oh, no. No.
Oh, my God. No. Please tell me it's as bad as you think.
Oh, my God.
Please tell me it's as bad as you think. Please tell me it's as bad as you think.
It's awful.
Oh. Oh. I may have a better record than Colton after this, which means Colton has to choose our next song.
We'll talk to the Blamley, everybody.
We'll see you on the other side.
No.
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
It was bad sports day. Baby, I love you. I'm sorry.
Oh, here's the thing. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everyone. My house is in shambles. This is what happens when my dad is listening to this and he's one that beat me. And dad, 2 weeks from now, you should be ashamed of yourself.
I love you, Steve, because this whole season, I have not seen my name above you in placement. I'm more than likely going to see it.
I
barring both my team a huge collapse and somehow whoever your dad still has left.
I have good news, which is, by the way, I have a song.
Good, good.
And I agree with you in that I don't think we should rate these because these were gifts.
Yeah. And it's fucked up to rate a gift, right?
Yeah, well, you should. Everyone, start rating gifts that people give you out of 10, like immediately.
Yeah, just go, the second you open
6.5.
Up, like, oh, 6. All right. Yeah.
I think that's the way people learn, right? It's like, oh, not a good. I barely hit a 7 last time, so I got to really up my game. By the way, I need to purchase the South Park episode. I'm trying to track it down so I can.
I think I can send it to you. I have it on my computer.
Oh, is this going to be tracked by the FBI? Are we going to?
I don't know.
You know what? I want to own it.
Okay.
I'm going to get it.
Matt Stone and Trey Parker are having a tough time. So
yeah, they're
put some more money in their
coffers, everybody, for those poor men. No, that'll be fun. And that'll be our second half of our Christmas extravaganza. I have been catching a Christmas spirit as we speak. I have a lot of work left to do, but I feel good.
Yeah, your dad gave you a wonderful gift today.
Of humility.
Of humility.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Humiliation. Did I say humility? I meant humiliation. Yeah.
You're showing a lot of humility, though, in it.
My family is a family of winners, and right now we're losers, and that's right. It's hard to hear.
And yeah, I know. I'm sorry, Nikki, but I think I beat you as well on this one. Ugh.
I feel like I want to really stump you on this, but I don't think I'm going to be able to.
Okay. You might be able to.
It feels like another Christmas gift, although I also really like this song.
Ooh, okay. That's almost the first hint.
I think so. And I think it's a good opening of the year, right? Is this going to be our first episode of 2026?
It should be. The South Park episode is going to be the 26th.
Okay.
So yeah, it'll be the first one of the 2026.
Okay, everyone.
Campaign.
Let's celebrate it right. I think this is fair. So, man. Okay, like I'm going to really say just words from the lyrics. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read random words from the lyrics.
Okay.
Okay. Chicken.
You said words and then just said one word.
I know. I'm just giving you single word clues.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But multiple. Yeah. Chicken.
Chicken. Yeah, obviously I'm going to need the next one.
Okay, that's fair. There are two words where if I said any of these two words...
Unless we're doing the Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, yeah.
China, the Chinese chicken?
Gucci.
Oh, okay. So we're going in the hip-hop direction?
No.
No, okay.
I could have let you decide for yourself, but no. Piggy.
What weird fucking song are we doing?
Oh, it's a weird one. Yuppies.
Ooh, I should get some off of Yuppies. No, I'm still stumped.
God.
Am I going to be embarrassed based off of what you said already?
I'll say this. I don't think this song is and I would say it's a very well-known song. Even for people who don't know this band, they probably know this song. I don't think the lyrics are like the draw necessarily.
Okay. But,
so I could be very mean about this. Okay. I'm going to end this. Android.
Radiohead?
Yeah.
Oh, Yuppie.
Paranoid.
Oh, Paranoid Android?
We're doing Paranoid Android. Yeah. Yeah.
What does he say Yuppie in that song?
I mean, when did he say Gucci? I've heard this song. Yeah, like
I know this song very well.
Kicking, squealing, Gucci, little piggy. The dust and the screaming later on. The yuppies networking. The panic, the vomit. Oh, man, it's going to be great. This song's good.
Yes,
this song is so good.
Wow. I've listened to this song so many times. Never knew he said Gucci right there.
Gucci, man. He is this. And then we said hip hop. I was like, no, but I could see it actually a little bit. There are some hip hop elements to this.
I am singing to that part because I know it's over there like.
Oh, this song is going to be so fun to talk about this.
So Gucci. He says Gucci there. Wow. To be fair, the dude doesn't enunciate shit.
Nothing. Like, zero.
He's got the Claudio Sanchez going for him.
I was literally about to say, he was before Claudio Sanchez, he was like the prime example of, I'm not going
to. I'm not going to enunciate at all. Jeez.
But Claudio Sanchez has willfully said words incorrectly on record. And when you read the lyrics, like, that's not how you say that word. Not even a little bit, Claudio.
I love the fact that I've already learned something new about a song that I'm so familiar with. Gucci. Okay.
I felt like this would be, like I've been planning this for days, but I felt like this would be a good, I had great. Others, yeah. But.
It's funny because I'm like, this is off of an album that I'm like, eventually we should do this album as well.
Well, and I had that thought too. I was like, maybe this is like a good enough record to pause on, but I was like, honestly, any song I thought would be worth doing had that same idea.
Yeah.
I was like, or the album would also be great. So
yeah.
We may double dip, everybody, but also this is a part of, I know we're not there yet. We're going to do New Year's resolutions next year, but my resolution right now, I want to listen to more Radiohead. I have listened to a very sadly low amount of Radiohead in my lifetime.
I promise to be right next to you on your journey because I have listened to a shitload of Radiohead.
I know you have. And a lot of people in my life that I like listen to Radiohead, and there's nothing about them that I don't like. It literally is just.
I don't really like Tom York the person all that much.
I don't have what's like his vibe. What's his deal?
He's just very pretend. Very not even pretentious. Just condescending. He's got like kind of that like he's looking down his nose more than looking you in the eye.
Well, I'll be happy to start listening to more Radiohead and tell you why I think he's bad. No, just kidding. I am excited to listen to more, and this is the beginning.
It begins.
It begin. Let it begin. Okay.
It does begin.
I think this is good for us.
I'm finally not going to be behind you, and I'm so excited.
I am so excited. Is the music playing now?
It's playing.
Goodbye, everyone. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy
all.